It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Evelyn Berkby, beloved Southwest Iowa columnist, broadcaster, and author, passed away on Sunday at the age of 101. Today, we're going to remember Evelyn by listening back to a conversation we recorded in 2018, when Evelyn was 99. I traveled to her home in Sydney, Iowa. In 1949, Evelyn Berkby was living on a farm in southwestern Iowa outside of Sydney when she began writing a weekly newspaper column called Up a Country Lane in the Shenandoah Evening Sentinel and later for the Shenandoah Valley News. She wrote that column for 70 years without missing a week. In 1950, she became a radio homemaker on KMA Radio, part of the Kitchen Clatter program. When I visited her, she had just published her 12th book, Through a Country Town Cookbook. It's full of her memories of graduating from high school in Sydney in 1936 and then returning there about a decade later to marry Robert Berkby, a Boy Scouts of America executive who was responsible for the four southwesternmost counties in the state of Iowa. They lived in Sydney together until his death in 2016. The book is also full of the history of this little town, the county seat of Fremont County, and it contains enough recipes to power a dozen church basement potlucks. At 99, Evelyn could no longer see, but she continued to live in her home with the help of a team of round-the-clock caregivers and the support of her three sons, who lived far away, but still kept a close watch on their mother. I paid Evelyn a visit at the home that she and Robert built together over 50 years ago. Oh, it's wonderful to see you.
Oh, honey, it's so good to see you.
And when we sat down to chat, I asked Evelyn about moving to Sydney in 1935 as a high school senior. I asked if it was hard to leave her friends in Waukee and start over in a new town as a senior in high school.
I had a wonderful father. And Methodist ministers at that time moved every two or three years. They just did. The Methodist Church had the idea that you moved the preachers often. If they were good with the youth, then maybe the next preacher would be good with the elderly. So they had the idea that you move a preacher often. Well, here I was, getting ready to leave Waukee. And we'd only been there 2 years. And I had some very, very good friends. Anyway, I was going to tell you what my father said. Every time we moved, he said, "It's okay to be sad, because it shows that you've had a good time here and you've made good friends. But just remember, you get to a new town and there's new people to meet and there's a new school to go to and a new church and somebody special." Well, what he didn't know was that Robert Berkby lived in Sydney. So when we moved here, I met Robert. He was in my class in school.
And he was Berkby and you were Corey, so you sat next to each other, right?
Right.
But you were not high school sweetheart.
No. His girlfriend was a Presbyterian. And she went to her youth group on Sunday night, and I went to mine across the street. Well, Robert lived on North Street, which is where the parsonage was. So I lived on North Street. So on Sunday night, Robert would walk home with me. And I liked that, because I liked him, but he never dated me.
Well, and after high school, you moved away and you became a career woman, right?
I guess I did. I finished my degree at the University of Chicago, and I worked in the First Methodist Church downtown in Chicago.
You ended up seeing Robert again when you came back to Sydney for a high school reunion, right?
No. I came out for my roommate's wedding. And they asked me to sing at their wedding. And I couldn't turn that down. She got married in the Methodist church that's beside Nebraska Wesleyan University in Lincoln. I visited my mother because she lived in Shenandoah, which was on the way.
So you saw Robert again when you were home for that wedding.
He was a Boy Scout executive. He had been in the Air Force and had gotten ill with rheumatic fever to the extent that he was dismissed from the Air Force and went home. And he had gotten an apartment in Shenandoah, where he lived just down the street from my mother. It was in the newspaper that I was home visiting my mother. They put it in the paper in those days. And he called me up. He said, "I hear you're at your mother's. I'd like to take you out for a date this evening." So there he was at my door at 7 o'clock.
It's a good thing he acted fast, wasn't it?
Yes, because he was there every day I was there. He was at that door. And the last day I was there, he took me down to the state park. Wabonsi is just south of Shenandoah. And he took me down there, had a chicken supper in the car. And we parked the car, carried the food, went down to the swinging bridge. Robert got us up to that little meadow, and he built a campfire so he could heat the chicken. I was impressed, really impressed. And a big moon came up.
How long was it before you guys got married after that?
Not very long, but I was smitten. There had been in Chicago, I had 6 Methodist preachers proposed to me.
6?
6.
Wow.
They all made the same mistake. They all said, "We have a church. We can go if we have a wife. They'll accept us if we have a wife."
Oh.
It was a business project. And I said no. Well, here was Robert. And the fact that my dad knew him and liked him played a big part in my quickness in accepting him.
One of the beautiful things I think about your marriage to Robert is that he encouraged you to work at a time when very few women worked outside of the home. In fact, he was the one that saw the advertisement in the newspaper that they were looking for a newspaper columnist and encouraged you to apply, right?
Yes. In fact, I said, "No, I don't write. I talk." I had done workshops and taught school and that sort of thing, so I had that kind of experience. Robert said, "No, that's just like you talk, you write it. You write it down." And he literally got out the typewriter and the paper and a chair and had me sit down and write a column. And then he put my hat on my head It was November, so he put my coat on. And he pushed me out the door, even though I was 8 months pregnant, gently. And said, go and give that column to the newspaper man in Shenandoah. And Mr. Archie had a big booming voice. And when I went in, I thought, I know what God sounds like. Just like Mr. Archie, with his big booming voice. Mr. Archie said, are you a farm woman? I want a farm woman to write. I said, yes, we live on a little rental farm. I have one baby, and I'm expecting another any time. Oh, he said, that's exactly what we want. And I'll run your articles as long as people are interested. And always put in a recipe, he said. I said, oh, yes, sir. I didn't tell him I didn't know how to cook. But you know, it was one of the best things that ever happened, because I called my neighbors. In 5 months, the radio station in Shenandoah called me. They wanted me to come and be a radio homemaker. And Robert said, sure, you can do that too.
We'll find out more about Evelyn and Robert Berkby's 70-year-long love story, about Evelyn's career and the history of Sidney, Iowa, in just a moment. We're listening back to a conversation recorded in 2018 when Evelyn Berkby was 99 years old. She was still writing her weekly newspaper column, Up a Country Lane, for the Shenandoah Valley News. She did that for 70 years without missing a week, and she had just published her 12th and final book. Evelyn Berkby passed away on Sunday at the age of 101. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Evelyn Berkby, one of Iowa's most beloved homemakers, passed away on Sunday at the age of 101. This hour, we're listening back to our 2018 conversation when I visited Evelyn in her home. She was a homemaker of the air on KMA Radio's Kitchen Clatter program in the 1950s. And she was a homemaker, but she was also an early career woman. She wrote the Up a Country Lane column, first for the Shenandoah Evening Sentinel and then for the Shenandoah Valley News, for 70 years. She was 99 years old when this was recorded and had just published her latest book through a country town cookbook. I traveled to Sidney to visit with her, and we spent the first part of our visit reminiscing about her courtship with Robert Berkby that led to a 70-year-long marriage and partnership. Robert encouraged her strongly to apply for the position of columnist and supported her in her radio career as well. I asked her, when she thought about those 70 years with Robert, that moment when he encouraged her to write that column and encouraged her to pursue her interests and her passions, her identity outside the house, did she think that was one of the keys to 70 years of happy marriage?
I think so. Because I had for 10 years, and I swore I grew up in those 10 years.
The 10 years of being away at school and working in Chicago?
Yes. It made me very independent.
So what else do you think made your marriage so successful? So many of us dream of having a 70-year-long happy marriage. So share some of your secrets.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Well, every night, we'd say, I love you. Every morning, we'd say, I love you. He'd say it to me, and I'd say it to him. And we did. The other happy thing, he told me before we married, he said, you'll help me learn. And I want to learn. He said, the GI Bill will pay for my courses, and you'll help me learn. I know you will. That's one reason I'm marrying you. Well, that was okay with me. That was a little different than the preachers. So there you go. I helped him learn, and he certainly did help me learn, because once I started writing, I was learning all the time.
Was it hard for you to work outside the home? Did some people judge you for that?
I don't have any idea that anybody did. My mother was a preacher's wife. She had gotten her music degree in Northwestern, which was certainly different than most women of that day. Even going was unusual. I think she inspired me that it was okay to go. And all the time she was married to Dad, she had a job in effect, because she had the choirs in the church. She had a children's choir and a youth choir and an adult choir. And she probably played whatever instrument was in the church.
Evelyn's love of learning is a thread that travels through every part of her life, even at the age of 99. When I arrived at her house, she was listening to a book on tape. She gets them through the lending library for the Iowa School for the Blind, and she goes through so many, it's hard for the library and her sons to keep up with demand. The book she was listening to when I got there was a biography of President Ronald Reagan, a book she had a keen interest in because her sister had a personal connection with Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan, for a time, was a radio sports announcer and had his office in a building in Des Moines. My sister lived at that time in Waukee, Iowa, 10 miles outside, where Dad was a Methodist minister. Mm-hmm. He used to go in to Ruth's office, where she was a secretary, and sat at the desk in the reception room. And he would come in and sit on her desk and visit with her. So then she went back out to Waukee and told the folks where she lived that Ronald Reagan sat on her desk and visited with her. And so she kept that job for as long as Ronald Reagan lived and worked in Des Moines.
Was she excited then when he ran for president so much later?
Oh, of course she was. Very. And when he became president, of course she was delighted.
But the book I came to talk about is Evelyn's latest, Through a Country Town Cookbook. It's about the history of Sidney, Iowa, her memories of life there, and it's full of recipes. Here's how it begins. Sidney is a relatively small rural community in southwest Iowa. You can't get more south or west in southwest Iowa, since Sidney is in the corner county, Fremont County, that borders on the south with the state of Missouri and on the west with the state of Nebraska. The Missouri River defines the western and part of the southern border of the county, winding its way from St. Louis up past Iowa on its way to its beginnings in western Montana. Fremont County has an illustrious history. In fact, its human history goes back to prehistoric days with the appearance of Earth Lodge dwellers. Later came mountain men and fur traders, map makers, and explorers from many countries, finally culminating in the early 1800s with the explorers Lewis and Clark. They not only passed by Fremont County on their westward trek, but in their journals they also talked about paddling up the two Nishnabotna rivers into the heart of Fremont County to see if those rivers held any further interest for their journey. I asked Evelyn what made her decide that at the age of 99, she was going to publish another book.
Well, I had another one in my head, and that was the one I wrote, the one about Sydney. It's the one that talks about what it was like. The year was, what, 1935?
Yeah.
When I was a senior in high school. In fact, I wrote it because it was so much like most small towns of that era.
Sydney is the county seat of Fremont County, and a beautiful red brick courthouse sits in the middle of the town square. Evelyn writes about the courthouse and the businesses that she remembers on the square, the Strand movie theater, the furniture store, which was also a funeral parlor, Hotel Sydney, and she writes about Penn Drug, which is still in operation. It's the oldest operating pharmacy in Iowa, and it also has a soda fountain, which is still a popular lunch spot for people in town. Evelyn also writes about some of the notable people who lived in Sydney, the longtime town doctors, Nellie Chapel, who taught a Bible class on Sundays at the Methodist Church and spent the rest of the week reading people's palms and astrology charts. And I was particularly taken with her chapter about Stella Cully. It starts out this way. "Don't you ever forget me," Stella Cully concluded every visit with those words. We would stand at the door and give her a hug and a kiss, and as we turned to wave goodbye, she would always repeat the statement, "Don't you ever forget me." Stella was a hard-working pioneer woman. She told stories about being born in a sod house on her father's homestead in Jewell County, Kansas, on December 29, 1877. Her younger sister, who was also born on the homestead, died of diphtheria. Stella talked about her experience with the terrible snowstorm of 1881, the time when many school children perished, which led it to be called the Children's Blizzard. Her parents would not allow her to walk to school alone. When she was 7 years old, the family moved to Red Cloud, Nebraska, so the young daughter could attend a good school. I asked Evelyn to tell me a little bit more about Stella Cully.
Mrs. Cully was raised over in Red Cloud, Nebraska. And who is the lady that she knew there?
Willa Cather.
Yes. Yes.
Willa Cather, the author of My Antonia and O Pioneers.
That's the first thing that she knew. Well, her family eventually moved to Missouri, which is a slave state. Mm-hmm. And there she saw a lynching. Oh. She said it was terrible. It was terrible. She remembered it.
And she always told you to never forget her, right?
Never to forget her. Every time I'd pick up the kids, and she always said she made cookies for them. She made them sugar cookies. And they thought they were the best cookies in the world. She had an old-fashioned kitchen, an old-fashioned house.
Do you ever think about how Mrs. Cully was your link to the past? But for so many people now, Evelyn, you're our link to the past. You're the one sharing these stories.
Well, I have a very sharp memory, and I thought, while I still have my memory, I've got to write them down.
So you're still learning and eager to learn more. I can imagine some people might think at the age of 99, you'd think you know it all.
The year I had my 90th birthday, I was still seeing, which I am not doing now. Mm-hmm. I was very gradually losing my vision due to hereditary glaucoma and macular degeneration. which took my vision completely now. Anyway, back when I was 90, I said to myself, if I'm going to live to be an old lady, which it looks like I am, and that I'm going to lose my vision, I'm not going to be negative. I'm not going to be grumpy. I'm going to be cheerful. I'm going to find out why God kept me here this long. There must be some reason you'd have people over 90. And I have these new people coming to take care of me now. So as I meet these new people, I'll see if there's perhaps a need that they have that I can contribute. So I think I found being positive has helped me to live longer. I'm still here and I'm 99 now. This coming July 31st, I will be 100 years old. So I treasure young friends. And I used to talk to high school kids a lot. And I always told them, three things help you live a long life. First of all, you don't smoke. No, not at all. Secondly, you drink frugally. What you're doing is keeping your mind clear. You don't get a second one. God gives you one good, clean mind. Keep it clean. And my last rule is stay positive. Stay happy. No complaining. So I tell people when they come to work for me, I don't allow grumpy people in my house.
In spite of the fact that Evelyn can't get around on her own, she still stays busy. She has a team of 8 different women who come in shifts to take care of her, keep her company, and take care of the home. She is very interested in the lives of these women. And she had dozens of questions for me about my life. She is also still, with a little bit of assistance, writing her weekly column for the Shenandoah Valley News. And once a month, she does an interview on the air on KMA Radio.
I go on live.
Nice.
It is as long as I can talk young. I don't want to talk old. When a person gets old, their voice sounds old, don't you think?
Our voices definitely change. So you don't want to sound old?
I don't want to sound old. And that's another reason I have Bob help me with my column. Because I don't want to write old. And I have him keep me writing younger.
Evelyn, you are 99 now. And next summer, you'll turn 100. What do you have planned for your 100th birthday?
Oh, my. Oh, my. I remember when my husband's mother had her 100th birthday in the old age home here in Sydney. We got a big angel food cake. And then we put 100 of those little tapers on it. And we could get 100 on that angel food cake.
I'll bet that was quite a blaze.
When we lit those candles, that flame went all together.
Oh, no.
And I thought we were going to burn the nursing home down. It went whoosh. Well, we didn't. Thank goodness. But we quickly got the flame blown out.
So are you hoping for the same kind of fireworks on your 100th?
I just think that we're going to put 100 number and tell our people you don't put 100 candles on a birthday cake.
Evelyn Berkby. She successfully blew out the candles on her 100th and 101st birthdays with no mishaps. She passed away on Sunday at the age of 101 of natural causes as members of her family sang one of her favorite hymns at her bedside. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.